Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, December 15th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, we have Greg Hunter will be joining us here in just a few minutes, so we're going to go ahead and get right to the market report. And, of course, Greg Hunter is the USAWatchdog.com is the website. But gold today, you know, was up most of the day, some pressure earlier in trade, but we're looking at 1061.90 for gold today. Silver, 1384, up 8 cents. Platinum was up bigger, up 7 at 858. Palladium was up over almost 3 1/3%, up $18 at 7. Oh, I'm looking at palladium. Or rhodium. Let me repeat this. Palladium up $18 at 567. Rhodium was 735, but palladium 567, up 18 at 3 1/3%. Yeah, rhodium took a hit today, down 10%. Down 10% for rhodium. Yeah. And you know, I used to follow rhodium a lot because it was fascinating to watch it rise from a level lower than this, and it was pushed all the way to $10,000. So it was interesting to watch it rise because I always correlated that rise is what we will see in gold as we watch gold prices rise, as it goes to show you that these metals can go to levels that high. Now, it didn't stay there very long. I wouldn't expect gold to stay there very long either, but it is coming. So make sure you you know, you're in at the beginning of the gate instead of coming in and paying $8,000 for an ounce of gold. And people will be paying $8,000 for an ounce of gold because they're not going to have a choice. Their little worthless currency, they will be buying $8,000 gold. The Dow, let's see, let's go to the dollar. The dollar is up 0.60 at 98.22, probably in anticipation of what's going to happen tomorrow. If rates rise, crude oil was up a little bit, 0.80 at 37.11. The paper markets today, although big, a big rise in the Dow, but off its highs for the day. Come on. Let's bring this screen up here. We had the Dow up 156 points at 17,525. The NASDAQ up 43 at 49.95. The S&P up 21 at 2,043. The 10-year yield 2.27%, up 0.04. A little pressure on the euro as we expect. 0.68 down at 109. London and Germany were up big. Germany was up over 3%. London was up 2.5%. Pressure on Japan, about almost 1.75%. Nothing much coming out of Hong Kong, though. So I guess everyone is expecting her to raise, I don't know what they're expecting her to do, but I think there's other problems other than her just raising rates a quarter point. And I think a lot of that has already been factored in. I think, yes, you're going to get some sort of a knee-jerk reaction, but come January, I think it'll be, I think reality will probably settle in, and you got an election year to look forward to, Al.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to an election year, Melody. I mean, as if we don't get enough bizarre.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, think of what we've seen so far, and we're a year away from the election, or at least 11 months. And it's already crazy. You know, you don't normally get this kind of madness until deeper into the election cycle. I think some of these candidates will be wearing rubber noses and big floppy shoes before the end of the campaign, but we'll watch and see. It's going to be strange times.
I know. It's really hard to believe we have, 11 months to go for the election. Go ahead.
There's a little bit of an article here that from another publication, junk bond market is starting to collapse. Mm-hmm. Stock market should quickly follow. Here's some of today's headlines. Junk bonds stagger as funds flee, from the Wall Street Journal. Zero hedge. Junk contagion spreads. Investment grade bonds plunge to 2-year lows. Treasury liquidity collapses. The problem with junk bonds is way bigger than oil. That's CNBC. And what they're saying, everyone follows this. They understand that the fall in the price of crude oil has caused a collapse in the price of junk bonds that were issued to crude oil producers. All right. But CNBC is apparently saying, no, it goes much deeper than that. This is not just about the oil problems. Well, there's more like this, but it does. There are more headlines like this, but they illustrate a point that maybe we are witnessing the beginning of a serious change with the junk bond markets declining. How likely is it that the stock markets are going to follow? And if they do, how deep is this going to go? Is this the beginning of something significant, or is this another day at the office?
Well, I think it goes much deeper, and I don't think this is another day at the office. And this is what we'll be talking about, Greg Hunter, once he gets online. And I guess he is online right now, Al.
All right. Well, shall we begin?
I just listened. It was very. I hope your listeners were enjoying that, because I was. I was like, very good. I mean, it was like, yeah, I agree.
Well, I agree with you. Second, jump in. This is Greg Hunter, of course, from USAWatchdog.com, and Greg is home to producer and interviewer of just an extraordinary group of people who have real insight, not just fluff, not just people that are running for office or something and trying to spread, trying to improve their brand. The people that want to communicate some information, and Greg is great at getting them to do so, and I'm sure they appreciate the opportunity. So this is Greg Hunter. He's our guest today from USAWatchdog.com. And what do you think about the junk bond situation right now? Is this
everything's a process. I mean, when you think about the crash of 08, I can remember Wachovia and Bear Stearns. I think Wachovia and Bear Stearns both went down in 07. Did they not?
Yeah.
I think they did. And it was a process. And, this is a process. And, of course, where's the weakest part of the of the bond market, that's the junk bonds. You know, it's the weakest debt because they're labeled junk bonds. We've been on, if you look at a graph of, and then for a short period from 2004 to 2006, you know, the Fed was freaking out and they started raising rates and then they started cutting them because they went too far and the thing was blowing up anyway. But if you just take a line from 79 all the way down to now, it basically, other than a few little blips and blobs, the trend is boom, in zero. And so, you know, now when we got all this debt and we need to roll over all this debt, we need to roll over more, and they need to make more, and they made more. I had Chris, and you think about the numbers, and they're stunning. You know, we got a 13, this is Chris Martinson, this is some numbers, $13 trillion increase in assets, excuse me, in GDP, producing real stuff. We had a $57 trillion increase in on top of all the debt we already had, which we didn't clear out any of it. We never cleared out any debt. We just added to it. It's like you getting ready to go into bankruptcy, and then some credit card company or several credit card companies say, oh, no, don't file bankruptcy. Get another $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 line of credit per card.
Yep.
That's what we did. That's exactly what we did.
Yep. And so how much longer can this game be sustained?
Well, that's a good question, and I think it's getting close, and I'll tell you why. I just had Rob Kirby on, and this is a revelation. Now, this was not covered in the mainstream paper. You know, all six of the big banks, 767, Goldman, Wells Fargo, State Street, Morgan Stanley, Citi, J.P. Morgan, all got downgraded all at the same time. Did you know that?
No,
I didn't.
That
story was not covered in the mainstream press in America. Mm-hmm. Covered in Financial Times, but it wasn't covered in the mainstream press. How could they do that?
Well, the significance is that we're not just talking about one bank.
All these banks got downgraded? Nothing.
The significance is not that we're not just talking about a single important bank being downgraded. We're talking about several important banks being downgraded.
In America.
And that indicates that the problem is systemic. It's not confined to a single bank.
Here's what Kurt said. He said, well, he's a derivatives expert. I mean, he was around at the beginning of the derivatives in the late 80s when, you know, and derivatives, if they were on a public, which Brooksley Bourne wanted to do in 99, if they were on a public trading platform where you had transparency and you couldn't, James Rickard says, gouge out somebody's eyes where they can't see anything. Yeah, but if you had them there'd be regulations on a public trading platform. There'd be regulations. There'd be guarantees. There'd be standards. There'd be everything, right? But they didn't want that. They stopped that. And they fired Brooksley Bourne, who was the head of the CFTC, I believe it was. Anyway, but let's go back to the banks being downgraded. And you may say, oh, my God, the banks are weak, which they are. But it's something even worse than that because Kirby says, well, you know, what they were doing was they were borrowing money at a cheaper rate than the federal government. What? So the federal government is a worse credit risk than these big banks? Oh, that can't happen. Yeah. That'd destroy the dollar. You can't have that. So they downgraded all the banks and raised their borrowing costs so the government could still borrow money cheaper than the big banks. And to your point, we're getting close. How close are we to the end? How many times do you think they can downgrade the banks like that?
How long can they do it without the public finding out?
The public can find out, but the mainstream press didn't cover it in America. Do you think they can do that another time?
I don't think they can. I think they've got.
I say that's a one-off, one-time desperation shot right there.
Yeah.
And so, because if they do, then they got to bring up the last one. Well, the last time they downgraded, a couple of months ago. Oh, whoa, it's a trend. What happened? They can't do that again. They were able to get this by, and don't think that this wasn't a coordinated effort because all these big banks went down at the same time, and S&P probably got the daylight scared out of them. And you know, it's
I understand. It's one of those. It gets you talking to yourself, and you can't help but wonder. But the implication of Mr. Kirby's analysis on this. Is that the government?
I think he's spot on. I don't think you can. That's the fact. They were using derivatives.
They're sacrificing the banks in order to maintain the illusion that the government is still solvent.
And that they're a better credit risk than the banks.
But this illusion is being intentionally orchestrated by the government. They said, we got to do something to make us look good. We can't make ourselves look good. We got to make somebody else look bad. All right, do the banks. Sacrifice the banks. That's just phenomenal if it's true.
They did downgrade the banks. True. And they were borrowing money cheaper than the federal government. That's true. Those are two true things.
Yeah, I understand.
So I don't want to get all conspiracy theory on you, but that's true. A, they got all downgraded. It's a Financial Times story. I believe it was Financial Times. One of the big ones overseas covered it. And I was like, wow, what? I didn't hear this. Oh, what? All the banks got. How come the Wall Street Journal isn't? Why did the USA Today? What? Huh? And they were borrowing money cheaper than, and he spotted this, that they were borrowing money cheaper than, using derivatives and leverage, they're borrowing money cheaper than the federal government. And so, you know, that can't happen, that they, you know, can't do that, can't have that.
That's remarkable. So that's a remarkable story. The implications are considerable,
and
we don't get it out of the mainstream media.
That's right. They did get, here are the two facts that are facts. They did get all downgraded. That's a fact. The second fact, according to Kirby's research, was we're borrowing money cheaper than the federal government. So what's your conclusion? Oh, my gosh. So the conclusion is, that's his conclusion. That's his analysis, and I think it's right on the money. And I don't think they, to your point, you're saying, how much longer can they do this? And I say, wow, how can they downgrade the banks again like that? And I say, probably that's a one-off deal.
They have raised the interest. They've effectively, by downgrading the banks, they've effectively raised their interest rate.
In order to make
the government. Does this strengthen the idea that the government will raise interest rates tomorrow and further essentially downgrade the banks so the government can still have the cheapest interest rates around?
Well, you know,
or the Fed there is interest
rates. I had Michael Pinto on, who manages, I don't know, millions of dollars, and he's saying that, listen, it's not a one and done and I was just going to paraphrase some of the interview. You should watch the interview. It's not a one and done, like Wall Street would like you to say. That's ridiculous. They have a dot plot. It's what they call the dot plot. And he says they want to raise rates effectively to 1.5% for the Fed funds rate, the overnight rate, not, you know, what, 0.12, 0.13, 0.11, you know, 11, 12 basis points, which is effectively zero. He says their target is to raise it 1.3 or 1.4 or 1.5%. Now, if this blows things up, you know, he says that Yellen's on record saying, well, we can just take it back. Boy, can you imagine what will happen if she has to do that? And then what happens if it does blow up and then she's forced to do, he thinks she'll be, you know, doing massive QE sometime in 16. She's a Democratic appointee. I'm neither Democrat nor Republican, but do you really think she's going to let the Democrats fry, the economy fry all over America? And then
can she stop it from frying? You know, the question is not necessarily will she allow it to happen, but can she stop it from happening?
They just did another crazy. Greg Mannarino said that they would do crazy, unthinkable, crazy things to put this off. And wow, downgrading all the banks covertly or quietly and not getting, you know, I can't believe the mainstream press didn't cover this. Nobody in the
history books didn't cover it much.
I mean,
it's something they'll include in the history books. We're going to break right now, take a couple of commercials. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and our guest is Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Don't make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Our guest is Greg Hunter, and Greg is getting an inside earful of what we're talking about. Greg interviewed a man named Scott Ellinger, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He was a former CIA officer with a Middle East and Russian focus, and talked quite a bit about Turkey. And there are Turkish troops in Iraq. They're threatening to block the Straits of the Bosphorus to bottle up the Russian fleet in the Black Sea. They've shot down a Russian fighter jet. What's going on with Turkey, Greg?
Well, let's see. Turkey has been basically sticking a stick in Russia's eye. They were talk of them closing the Bosphorus Strait, which is, the strait goes into the Black Sea. That would be a full-blown shooting war in a heartbeat if they tried to block in the Russian fleet. Russia recently shot at a Turkish ship, and because it was on a collision course with one of the Russian ships, supposedly.
Yep.
I don't know. Turkey's now saying that they have their patience. They have a limit with Russia in terms of their patience. They, from Russian warship fire shots at a Turkish vessel in the Aegean Sea on Sunday to avoid collision, and summoned the Turkish military attaché to Moscow because of the incident. That's what's been reported. So they say. I don't know. It looks like, you shoot down a Russian jet and then the people you support kill one of the pilots parachuting down. Wow, an act of war and a war crime all at one shot. Why that hasn't spun out of control, I don't know. NATO's, Turkey is part of NATO. And if they were not part of NATO, I suspect that the Russian bombers would be hitting Turkish military sites all over the place. And they're not. So I don't know. It's not looking good.
What does Turkey have? What does Turkey have that emboldens them to the extent we've seen? You know, if they shoot a plane out of the air, you would suppose the Turkish, oh my gosh, what have we done? But no, they're kind of doubling down. They're saying this isn't going to slow us down. They're looking for a fight. I mean, that's what it looks like from the outside. It appears that Turkey is looking for a fight, and they must have something up their sleeve.
I think what they have up their sleeve is NATO.
Well,
you know, they're a NATO country. If Russia attacks Turkey, it's all for one, one for all in NATO. And I can't imagine the high level meetings that are going on in the background, going, hey, what are you doing? Russia was, one of their planes allegedly was in over their skies for 20 seconds and they shut it down. You know, there's this open sky thing for that very reason. If somebody does touch in somebody's airspace, you don't go shoot them down.
Here's where it gets interesting. They're talking about NATO is, of course, Turkey is part of NATO. If Turkey gets into a war with Russia, NATO is supposed to back Turkey. NATO, correct. I'm assuming that this implicates the United States is also supposed to back Turkey. But isn't the United States helping the Kurds?
This is the sticky mess that is the Middle East. You had Scott Uhlinger come on and say, "Yay, listen, he was retired only a year ago. The CIA told the Obama administration, they're under this, people are under this false impression that the orders come from the middle up, and they don't. This is from the top down. Now, that's not to forgive the CIA and whatever they do with, Army. Maybe they were told, we don't care who you arm, just knock out Assad. Well, they didn't care who they armed, so guess what? Al-Qaeda and ISIS and all this went, at the very least blew up in people's faces. But on top of that, they told the Obama administration, the CIA, according to Uhlinger, former CIA station chief, we told them early on, when we told them, they knew that ISIS was selling oil to Turkey, a NATO country. Russia has come up with this. Now this has come out, you can't be denied. This was up in the foreign press, more than a year ago, but to have a CIA agent come out and spell that out and say the Obama administration knew full well this was going on, means, now why, maybe he didn't want to have you'd cut off their money first thing, you'd cut off the oil, and maybe somebody was getting greased in Turkey, which probably they were. Now Erdogan's son is implicated, and that's been published. And now you have, that the Russians knocking out this oil trade and somebody's getting, losing money. And then you have the Russian plane being shot down. And then you have, supposedly Turkey says it's a fishing vessel and Russia shooting, warning shots to wave off the vessel coming right at their ships. This is just looking bad.
Yeah,
and then
I know.
You have, us arming the Kurds, and then you have the Shia militia. Doesn't want the United States there, it's been reported. And then you have the Turks that want to go after the Kurds, which the U.S. is supporting, and we have supposedly our own troops there. And then we have, use of an air base in Turkey. What a mess. I mean, what a complete colossal mess. And, we're backing a terrorist organization, and that'd be ISIS and or Al-Qaeda, either overtly or covertly, by accident, on purpose, I don't know. And then the Russians are backing Hezbollah in Iran. And last I checked, Iran is still on the state sponsor of terror list over the State Department, which, incidentally, that was not a deal. No deal has been, according to one congressman, I can't remember his name, I posted it on my site, Pompeo, who the State Department wrote back and said, there's no signed deal. There's no signed deal? What? So there's no deal with Iran. No deal. And the Rouhani, the president of Iran, has said, no, we don't want to burden our, his quote was something to the effect of, which was reported, we don't want to burden our citizens with this kind of a deal. And so there's no deal. This is a total scam by John Kerry and the Obama administration and the President Obama. Total scam. There
and
is
when
no
you
deal.
Say total scam,
to
do you mean that they have allowed us to believe there's a deal when in fact there was not?
There's no signed deal. I'll tell you what, I put this on my website, and there is a letter that Pompeo put out, a congressman, Pompeo, California. He put out, isn't that a revelation? And boy, nobody, why didn't Fox cover this?
I understand. I mean, this is extraordinary.
Hold on. IMF down, Russia, down.
nuclear Syria and an S&P down. Great, hold on.
A place for everything and everything someplace.
Yeah, hold on, I'm at a State Department deal. Now, here we go. It's all my section called News from Around. This is the National Review, State Department. This is the National Review, it's a good source. Iran deal not legally binding, and Iran didn't sign it, is their headline. And it was Congressman, I believe it's Mike Pompeo, and they put a copy of the letter from the State Department. Mike Pompeo, he is a House of Representatives, and they wrote him a letter November 19th, 2015. And this person who wrote him a letter basically said that, no, they didn't sign it, but, oh, we can do snapback. This thing really lives and dies on the snapback sanctions. Really, all the countries in there, France, Germany, Russia, China, everybody's in there doing business now. They're going to snap back if they can't get this. They're going to put sanctions back on them? Really?
Yeah.
This is Julia Freefield, assistant.
It means that the Iranians got the sanctions off. Did they get their $100 billion or whatever was being held?
I don't know. Who knows what's true or what's not?
There's no deal, but we did give them $100 billion. Is that true or false?
$100 billion. I don't know. I hear two different. I mean, it's a big variance, right? Big spread. You can go to USAWatchdog.com. You can scroll down on the right side. It says new section. Click here to read the latest news and top stories from around the red. And if you click in, you go down there, you'll find this National Review story. You can't miss it. It's unbelievable. It's a total scam. John Kerry's a total scam. Total scam. I'm telling you. He's going to walk out. You're going to walk out. Oh, you mean and not get anything signed? That's exactly what he did. That's exactly what he did, according to Mike Pompeo in the paper trail from the State Department.
Now, who benefits? No deal. I can't see that Obama has benefited from this, but it may be some way he calculates that he does. I don't know if that's true or false. I would suppose that Israel has benefited if there's no deal. They didn't want a deal up there. I would suppose that Israel's the primary beneficiary if there's no deal.
They wanted inspections. They didn't want this. They wanted inspections. They didn't want Iran to get their $150 billion back. They didn't want any of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, everybody
well,
says,
if they
oh,
got
Israel
it. Again, I don't know if they
really
got it or they didn't get it,
deal?
But it's one of those things where it's just, if this is true that they got their $100 billion, $150, whatever it was, this is just another evidence of Obama being absolutely outfoxed. I mean, this
I
just makes,
it
makes
the
United
purpose.
States look stupid.
Of ideologues. They wanted to make some money. The economies are doing terrible around the world. Iran was never going to sign a deal. They were never going to be held to a deal. And there's a lot of money to be made there. And they just went, let's just go through the paces. And, well, pretend there's a deal. We have snapback sanctions that they'll never snap back. I think that whole thing is just a money grab.
Your guest, Scott Hillinger, he said at one point, the Obama administration is so ideologically driven that they've set up an alternative reality. They're talking about the Middle East, for example, using the excuse they don't want to damage the environment as an excuse for not attacking ISIS. You mentioned ideology just now. Do you think the Obama administration has really set up an alternative reality based on ideology rather than pragmatic assessment of the facts? Do you agree with
that? Well, if you were pragmatic, you would say we have a problem with a percentage of mosques in America that have radical Islam. And he can't even say radical Islam. He can't say it.
Yeah.
He can't say it. He won't say it. He can't say it. The FBI in 2009 said 10% of the 2,000 mosques were preaching and doing radical type jihad plans against America. There were three studies, and this is from a Muslim that I saw on one of the networks, saying there were three studies between 2005 and 2011. Basically, about 70% of the mosques in America had some sort of preaching, some sort of violent jihad. And they're getting this from the Quran. This is coming from the Quran. I'm not misquoting it. I'm not trashing it. I'm saying this is what's in the Quran. Violence is in the Quran. I think one of my posters posted,
And this is not a small thing. One of the fundamental, one of the core principles of the Western, one of the core principles of the Western world is freedom of religion. And not just freedom to practice religion, but freedom to choose your religion. All right? This is fundamental to Western thought, Western culture. All right? We may not, the Baptists may not think much of the Methodists, but just the same, they're willing to coexist. This is based on the idea, from my perspective, Genesis 1, 26 through 28, all men are created in God's image. And Genesis 9, 6 says the reason you can't kill a man is because he's made in God's image. Muslims don't recognize that principle. They're sitting back and say, we can kill anybody. This indicates a fundamental difference between the two faiths and the two cultures, the West and the Middle East, that is not going to be reconciled. They don't seem to realize that people are made in God's image. They don't accept that idea. Completely contrary to the Jewish and Christian faiths. You follow what I'm saying? The implication here is that you're not going to put these two groups together and get them to play nice. It's part of the reason we've been fighting with Muslims for 900 years. What do you think?
We don't have a president that will even identify it. So
I understand that. Does that mean the alternative reality that the President Obama is promoting, again, Scott Ellinger, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but a CIA officer who talks about an alternative, is that alternative reality pro-Muslim? And more to the point, there have been people who have speculated for years that Obama himself is actually certainly more than usually sympathetic to Muslims and perhaps regards himself as a Muslim. Is his alternative reality pro-Muslim?
A lot of people say he is, and look at his policies, so I don't know what to tell you. As a reporter, I don't have any sourcing other than the fact that he says he's not. Other people say he is, and they point to his policies, so I don't know what to tell you on that.
What do we make of Russia's re-entry into the Middle East? They've been gone for about 25 years, if I understand correctly, and they are now back in, and they are in big time.
Well,
is this
own...
a minor event, or is this a major geopolitical change?
No, major deal, biblical, I mean, I think. I mean, they wanted to cut a pipeline through Syria. Assad said no. Russia said no, it'll cut into our gas and natural gas deal. Saudi Arabia and Qatar said, yeah, they wanted it. They're also two big supporters of ISIS and al-Qaeda, and they wanted it done no matter how they could do it. They needed to unseat Assad, but, you know, Russia has a base there in Tartus, and they were never going to let that go. A strategic naval base outside of Russia, TARDIS. It can handle, nuclear-type submarines and all kinds of stuff. And they spent, I don't know, $9-10 billion on it years ago. It's in the eastern Mediterranean off the coast of Syria. I've been saying this since, I don't know, 2010, since 2010, that they were never going to let that go. So, yes, it's a big problem. And they have their own terrorists, Hezbollah. And Iran, so we just—it's a sticky mess. There's no peace process. There's no ratcheting down the rhetoric. There is what I see is just increased tension, increased arming, increased problems.
We're going to take a break for some commercials right now. When we come back, we're going to let Greg tell us whether or not regional war may be imminent in the Middle East. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-8255. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Our guest is Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. We have troops from Turkey who are in Iraq, claiming to have been invited. And Iraq says, no, you weren't. Iraq is trying to get the Turkish troops out. They say, oh, no, you invited us. We're entitled to be here. We've got troops from Turkey. We've got Russian troops moving into Syria. We've got American troops to some degree up there. I don't know how many other troops and more countries coming in all the time, at least in terms of Air Force. I believe Britain and France are in there. What could go wrong? That's my first question to you, Greg. What could possibly go wrong when we've got armies from half a dozen different countries concentrated in a small area? What could possibly go wrong? And is regional war imminent in the Middle East?
All the evidence, Russia, U.S., France, Germany, Great Britain, Turkey, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, everybody is in on this deal. China, you say what could go wrong. You know, this could go global. Who says it's going to stay in the Middle East?
Well, I understand. I understand that's the possibility.
There's no ring fencing in the Middle East. So I've been predicting this for a while. I said that the Iran deal would ratchet things up in the Middle East once it was signed. Well, I'm sorry, it was never signed. But, you know, supposedly we had a deal. There's no deal. There's no signature. There's no deal. That's a lie. There is no deal. According to the State Department, there is no deal. So it just ratcheted things up, and so Alon was he was down in the low double digits for popularity, and all of a sudden he starts wanting to bomb the Islamic State, and his popularity pops up. This is what Gerald Celente was, some of his analysis saying, you know, what is that all about? People don't realize France has some very weak banks. There are very weak banks, in America. Not just they downgrade them or that ploy to make the dollar look better, but I think that's part of the reason why Janet Yellen is. They say it's, boy, she doesn't raise rates. The economy is going to go. The market's going to go. Oh my goodness, this thing really is bad. But what she wants to propel, I think, and I've said this before for the last couple of weeks ago, I think that she wants to propel. Really, the economy is good. Look at this low unemployment rate, which is a phony number. Look how great everything's doing, and of course everything is not doing great. I had Peter Schiff on about two months ago saying it's going to be a horrible Christmas. All the indications are down, down, down. Baltic Dry Index, housing, retail sales, horrible. Everything is horrible, and she's raising rates into a declining economy, a declining global economy.
Is she doing that because she has to prop up the dollar? Is she, you know, what's the reason why she's doing that? Because she wants to be off zero. She could end up turning around and in a couple of right raises. I mean, I don't know if she's going to do an eighth, and then in 3 months do another eighth, or do a quarter. According to Michael Pent, who was on tonight past midnight. He says they want to be about 1.3, 1.45, somewhere in the next year. Now, they may have to backtrack on all that. And
well,
so,
David Stockman's talked about the raise of the increase in their money rate in the interest rates. And he says they can't possibly raise money market interest rates, even by 75 basis points, without massively draining liquidity from the casino. Now, does Stockman mean that the stock markets are significantly funded and therefore supported by borrowed money, and that borrowed money is only borrowed because interest rates are so low? Thus, if they raise interest rates only a little, will the borrowing decline cause much of the money supporting the stock markets to be withdrawn and thereby cause the price of stocks to fall? Is that what he's talking about?
Listen, the stock market isn't the big market to worry about. It's the debt market. The debt market
dwarfs
the stock market by orders of magnitude.
Yeah.
And they can't service this debt. Remember when we first came on, they grew the debt. Now, they didn't pay off anything. They grew the GDP of the world since, 08? I believe this is Chris Martinson's work I'm quoting. And he says, we increased the debt $57 trillion. We grew it $13 trillion and added $57 trillion in debt. They got to service that debt. Somebody has to make the payments. And this is like a very promiscuous girl who's having a great time playing the field until she misses a period. And that's the same thing that, you can borrow all kinds of money and you can have a great lifestyle until you start missing the payments. And then reality hits you in the face. Because when you stop paying people, bad things happen.
Real bad things start happening. Your bonds become worthless.
That's why the junk bonds are going bad, because that's why these redemptions, the gates are closing for these hedge funds. Everybody's wanting to run for the exits, and all of a sudden they're gated out. And this is only going to get worse, especially if Yellen raises, and if she has to reverse it. Now, you think about this. Let's say in 3 months or 5 months, or maybe it just all blows up with the derivatives of a quadrillion. I don't know. I do not know. And then she says, I made a mistake. Or maybe she says, and she's according to, you should watch the interview tonight, which is, I think, very, because it's 23 minutes. I'm just trying to pick out a couple of data points ended up from memory. What happens if she has to reverse herself?
Can she?
We can just take it back.
Can she do that?
Well, what do you think is going to happen to the economy when she has to say, yeah, it's so bad, we got to start printing money, and we have to lower interest rates back down to zero? And remember, the economy is declining. That means revenue is decreasing. That means the ability to service debt is declining.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start missing the payments, what's a bond worth if nobody's paying for it? If they can't make the interest rate. Look at Puerto Rico.
If they can't pay the interest, that means they're broke. It becomes evidence that the government is technically broke. They are insolvent, arguably bankrupt. Now what?
Well, reset. All the stuff you thought was a, quote, asset, end quote, ain't an asset.
That's right.
Well, we've been told for the last 30 years that bonds are an asset. And they have been, because we've had this increasingly declining interest rate curve, down, 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 down. A few little dips and blobs up and down, but basically increasingly down. I mean, if you go from a 4%, a 5% bond to a 3% bond, that's not as bad as it going, in other words, the reversal of that. But if you look at a chart and you look all the way down, we're down at zero. We have nowhere to go but up. But we still need to finance stuff, and it's going to be more expensive as we are declining, as the Baltic Dry Index is declining, as the global economy by all measures. Look at oil. It's, $38 a barrel. We have a glut because people are using less power because they're doing less commerce. That means they can't support the debt that we've blown up since 07 and 08. So who knows when it's going to blow, but we're getting close.
Yeah. That's exactly
we're
right.
Much closer.
And what it means is, again, they'll have to repudiate some of the debt. At least some treasury bonds or some entitlements or some subsidies. Something the government, some pensions. Something the government has been paying or at least appearing to pay, they're just going to have to say, well, sorry about that. We're going to have to hold off on that for a while. They'll have to repudiate part of the debt. They repudiate the debt. If the debt is permanently repudiated, the problem is that that debt is memorialized by treasury bonds, for example, not the only way, but treasury bonds that people are holding in their pocket. And they're saying, look, I have an asset. I have a treasury bond worth $100,000. I'm a rich guy. They repudiate the debt. They repudiate the correlative assets.
They also repudiate
that's
the
dollar.
Danger. We could just print dollars, and we don't. We go to the Federal Reserve and say, here are some treasury bonds. And the Federal Reserve says, okay, here are some Federal Reserve notes. Well, if the bonds are no good, then aren't the dollars, you know, also corrupted?
I understand.
If the bonds are going to pay
what
off,
about fractional reserve banking? Where you put a bond in the bank for $100,000, and in theory, the bank can lend multiple times the face value of the bond out to the public so we can buy a new flat-screen TV. If the bond turns out to be worthless, they can't lend that money, and the existing loans, which are multiples of the face value of the bond, those loans may have to be called in.
Well,
I mean, the fractional reserve banking that works great on the way up works. It's terrible on the way down. It multiplies on the way down, too.
And here is why you should be holding assets that don't have a counterparty risk.
Now, for example.
The whole reason. And then, and you, if people think that they, when this thing blows up, okay, well, when it blows up, I'll just run out and I'll call Melody Cedarstrom and I'll buy some gold. Well, you're not going to be able to do business, and Melanie may not even have any gold.
It's going to happen so fast.
It's going to happen so fast. I mean, you're going to start selling your inventory at the paper fraud price when you can't. You don't know whether you can, you know, put that inventory back. Are the commissions going to go way up? Probably.
Well, people,
that's just the nature of the
business. It's going to be difficult to buy gold because people who hold it will assume that its purchasing power is going to increase. They're not going to be inclined to sell it for the current paper money price. They're going to say, well, I'm going to sit on this for another 6 months or a year because I think it's going to be worth $5,000, $10,000. Who knows what it's going to be worth? You're going to have trouble finding it, but when you say buying assets that don't have counterparty risk, you are essentially saying buying assets that are in paper, point one, paper debt instruments, and point two, you're talking about, you're specifically talking about gold and silver, at least as a liquid, as much as liquid can be under these dire circumstances. Got to get some gold, got to get some silver. Just sensible. I mean, it's like having a life preserver. You are on a ship, ladies and gentlemen, that's being steered by some crazy people. Knowing that, if you agree with that assessment, we may not hit an iceberg. But if we do, wouldn't it be a good idea to have a life preserver close at hand? You know, that's what we're talking about, a certain amount of common sense. What about the plunging oil prices? Oil has dropped dramatically in the last year, 18 months.
It is all
can the plunging oil prices trigger a stock market collapse?
You know, they want to sell you the idea that it's a great piece of news, and yes, at the pump, it's a great piece of news. But, you know, the oil industry is very capital intensive, and they've got a bunch of bonds out, they got a bunch of loans out, they got a bunch of stuff out that needs $60, $80 a barrel to break even, and they're not breaking even. And you can add this to the list of defaults and insolvency that's going to happen. That is happening, and this is why the junk bonds are the first to go, and who knows what's happening in the background and what they're doing at the Federal Reserve and the Exchange Stabilization Fund, which, you know, the Plunge Protection Team, which is the Treasury and the SEC and the Federal Reserve, and the I think the CFTC is in there too, and they are all in there, you know, manipulating the markets. And so, you know, how long can they do it? When do they zig and everything zags on them? We're getting close, but the oil is yet another. If you add it to the, you know, the straws on top of the camel, which one's going to break the camel's back? And the answer is I don't know, but the straws are adding to the camel's back. They're not taking them off. They're adding them to it. And so I don't, I don't know. When it goes, it's going to go fast. That's my...
I understand.
It's going to go fast.
As does the time on this program, we're down to where we have about 2 minutes left. I've got one more question for you that I think you could probably spend an hour answering, or at least 10 or 15 minutes, but in the last 90 seconds, anti-Muslim sentiment is growing. Is this evidence of bigotry, Islamophobia, or common sense?
The FBI in 2009 said 10% of the mosque, estimated, did some kind of, were putting together and preaching some kind of violent jihad, violence at mosque. That's 10% of 2,000 mosques, that's 200. Studies from 2005 to 2011 say that somewhere in the neighborhood, on average, 70% of the mosques either preach it or hand out information on violent jihad. Now, it's not bigotry if it's true, and this is what all the sourcing says. This is what it says. So I don't know what to say. Where are all the Muslim? Where are all the moderate Muslims? Why don't they stand up and say, "Hey, we are against this. We think this is wrong. This is not going to happen." We had an imam down in Texas on the Hannity show said, "Yeah, maybe we ought to take a break. We should need to protect America. We have a problem with violent Islam." Not all Muslims, but I don't see the Muslim community standing up and shouting this down and condemning it. I don't see it at all. I just had a weekly news wrap up. I got 1,000 comments between YouTube and the site. 1,000 comments. Not a single Muslim came on and said, "Hey, this is a big problem in the mosques and some mosques, not all, condemn this, and this should not happen here in America. We shouldn't kill people for their beliefs or be planning any violence against anybody." I don't see that. That's not happening. Oh, there was a USA Today article this week that said, by a Muslim, I can't believe she teaches journalism. Like, unbelievable. And she says, Trump is her son's boogeyman. Mama, are we going to get deported? Oh, really? Trump's your boogeyman? Not the two people that murdered 14 people out in California.
Yeah.
They're not the boogeyman.
That's right.
Donald Trump's the boogeyman.
Yeah.
Are you with me on this? There's a problem.
Greg,
it's
we're out of
problem.
Time. We have to thank you. We have to close down right now. We could go another hour, I'm sure. But we're out of time. Look forward to talking to you again in the near future. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom, and we will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Greg, Melody, Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.